Hi, everybody. I'm Chris. I'm the pastor here at Lost Floors Church, and welcome. Thanks for joining us. And we are continuing in James, and we're kind of getting to the end of it. We're in chapter 5, so we'll have this week and next week, and we'll be moving on to something else. But today's an interesting topic. We're going to be talking about wealth, about rich people. Now, when we think about rich people in our society, we always exclude ourselves, obviously, and we think of the rich, the richest, and today it's not just being a millionaire, it's being a billionaire, right? Well, I just read some stuff about some of the wealthiest people in American history, and so this guy actually went back and he took the wealth of people like Rockefeller and others and adjusted it to today's dollars. And interestingly, John D. Rockefeller was the very first billionaire in the United States. Somewhere around 1900 in that time, he started Standard Oil. And he basically made a monopoly. He owned 90% of all oil companies before the government in 1911 broke that up. And there's all kinds of allegations of price fixing and underhanded business deals. But still, John D. Rockefeller finished his life as the number one wealthiest American with $253 billion. That's pretty amazing. Cornelius Vanderbilt ended up with $205 billion. He was into steamships and railroad and things like that. And surprisingly, there were some things said about him having some shrewd business practices also. John Jacob Astor, he was one of the few that he actually got some money from his wife's family, but he got into real estate in Manhattan. And by the time he died, he had over 700 properties in Manhattan. And his worth had been somewhere around $138 billion. Now, I just want to tell you, $1 billion is a lot of money. You realize if you had $1 billion and you spent $1 million a month, it would take you 83 years and 4 months to spend all that money, as long as it didn't earn any interest. It would be hard to actually spend it in your lifetime. You'd have to work at it. That's what blows my mind about the wealth of these people. And then there's Stephen Girard. He ended up with $120 billion. And he ended up, after he left his business of shipping, he became a financier. And he loaned the government money. He made astronomical amounts of money, most likely cheating the government. And again, people weren't super happy with the way he went about doing business. And then number 6 in American history is Andrew Carnegie. Now, he's one of my favorites because this guy, he made it in the steel industry. And somewhere towards the end of his life, he is well known for trying with all his might to give away all of his money. Now, some of them gave to charity, others, they didn't. But Andrew Carnegie, his goal was to actually give away all of it. He started over 3,000 public libraries and all kinds of nonprofit things. And he had this quote in one of his own essays that said, "A man who dies rich dies disgraced." It's pretty interesting. And with that, I want to dive into what James has to say about the wealthy. In James 5, 1 through 6, James says, "Look here, you rich people. Weep and groan with anguish because of all the terrible troubles ahead of you. Your wealth is rotting away, and your fine clothes are moth-eaten rags. Your gold and silver are corroded. The very wealth you were counting on will eat away your flesh like fire. This corroded treasure you have hoarded will testify against you in the day of judgment. Listen, hear the cries of the field workers whom you have cheated of their pay. The cries of those who harvest your fields have reached the ears of the Lord of heaven's armies. You have spent your years on earth in luxury, satisfying your evil desires. You have fattened yourself for the day of slaughter. You have condemned and killed innocent people who do not resist you." Wow. I'm just going to say James has some pretty strong words for the rich people, right? I mean, you can just read through there, and he obviously is writing this letter, and he knows that there's some rich people out there that are part of the believers. And I don't know what's happening, but he's not pleased about it. And really, we have to ask ourselves, well, what's wrong with the rich? Why is James so passionate in his words? Now, here's one thing. When I read this and I read about the rich and the poor, one thing I think of is James is referring to our circumstances in life. We all have different circumstances, and our circumstances change throughout life. But if we start pointing out that this person's rich and this person's poor, one of the things we're doing is we're pointing out this is the circumstance they are in, that they have plenty. They have not so much. And so basically this kind of becomes the circumstance that they are in. And if you have a lot of money, you tend to be looked at as you have a really good circumstance. You have nothing to complain about, right? Now James has a different view on it. He's looking at this going, it's actually not a good thing. It makes it more difficult for you to be rich. And that's what's interesting, was I was reading through the top of the wealthiest people that have ever lived in the United States. There's all kinds of negative things about them. The way they did business, the way they cheated people. Reading through that, it's pretty easy to feed into the idea that rich people cheat people. And that's kind of what James was saying. You're not paying your workers right. Their groans are being heard by God. And so there's an arrogance about the rich people. They take care of themselves, but they're not taking care of even those that are working for them. The question I would have for myself and for us is, if we were in their situation, these extremely wealthy people, would we be different? What would our faith in God be like? Would we be different than what James is talking about and the wealthy people we know? That's a question for us, right? We have to look inside of our own hearts, depending on our situation. Do we change? Does our faith in God change? And I pointed out earlier, there's a guy like Andrew Carnegie, who, to the best of his ability, literally tried to give away his fortune. Now, you don't hear about that too often. I don't know if he was successful. I don't know how he went about it. I don't actually know much about him, except that sounded pretty good to me. Here's a guy that's a little bit like Jesus talked about, right? The rich young ruler. And Jesus, you remember in that story, the rich young ruler, he confronts him, and the guy wants to figure out, you know, how his faith can lead him into heaven. Jesus, you know, tells him, oh, do all the stuff you know you're supposed to. Then also, oh yeah, sell everything you have and give it away to the poor. And you go, what? Isn't that Andrew Carnegie's giving it all away? Well, what an example, right? But what I find interesting is right after Jesus is talking to the rich young ruler, he turns to his disciples and he tells them how difficult it's going to be for the rich to get into heaven. It's like a camel trying to go through the eye of a needle. It just sounds impossible, right? And then there's another story that Jesus tells about the rich man and Lazarus, the beggar outside the rich man's door, and they both die. The beggar's in heaven, Lazarus, and here's the rich man. He's in hell begging for the poor man outside his gate just to touch his tongue with water. And so often we read this stuff in the Bible, and it tends to be targeted at the rich are going to have a hard time in faith. And so what is it about the rich? What is it about money that makes it so difficult to be faithful in our relationship with God? And I guess the question we need to ask, is it being rich? Or is it the attitude we have toward God and people? I think that's really the question. I think we need to ask ourselves the question I said earlier. If we were in their situation, would we be any different? If our circumstances right now changed and we became incredibly wealthy or incredibly poor, would our attitudes toward God and people, would it change? Now, James goes on, verses 7 through 12. Dear brothers and sisters, be patient as you wait for the Lord's return. Consider the farmers who patiently wait for the rains in the fall and in the spring. They eagerly look for the valuable harvest to ripen. You too must be patient. Take courage, for the coming of the Lord is near. Don't grumble about each other, brothers and sisters, or you will be judged. For look, the judge is standing at the door. For examples of patience and suffering, dear brothers and sisters, look at the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. We give great honor to those who endure under suffering. For instance, you know about Job, a man of great endurance. You can see how the Lord was kind to him at the end. And the Lord is full of tenderness and mercy. Courage and patience as followers of Jesus. Now, interesting, he talks about the end times, waiting for Jesus to come again. Jesus very clearly tells us in his teachings not to try to figure out the day or time. We're just wasting our time. And so James is saying kind of the same thing. Be patient. That's not, should not be your focus. Instead, be courageous. Live to the best of your ability. And so what are the things that James taught us? So as we're living out, as we're living lives as followers of Jesus, we should be doers of good things. James was always talking about that. Last week, he talked about being peacemakers. Be careful with the words that we use. Let the Spirit of God fill us up. And having true faith and living out this true faith in God, in Jesus. I find it very interesting here that James talks about the rich. And then he comes back and he uses an example of Job. Now he's saying, hey, if you want to look at someone that was patient during suffering, look at Job. Now, if you go and you read the book of Job, it's a really interesting story. And one, if I'm quite honest, has bothered me throughout the years. Because you've got a guy that, well, God and Satan are having a conversation about him. And Satan basically comes to God and says, hey, I think I can make your man Job sin. Because God had said, hey, have you seen Job? He's the best, man. He is awesome. And Satan says, I think I can do it. You protect him. But if you take away that protection, you see what happens. He will curse you. And so God allows Satan to take all kinds of stuff from him. So Job was very wealthy in that day. He had wealth. He would have been like the top five. And they said he was one of the richest people in the land. So he's like these top five, maybe billions of dollars. Couldn't even begin to spend all he had. And in one day, God allows Satan to take it all away, including his kids and his grandkids and houses and all of his livestock. Every last bit of wealth and joy from his family is taken away. The only part of his family that's left is his wife. And his wife gets so angry with him that she tells him to curse God and die. Day two, Job is still praising God. His situation's completely changed. He doesn't understand what happens, but Job is still praising God. And then Satan comes back to God and says, well, come on. He is now, but let me harm him physically and we'll see what happens. Then he'll curse you. So God allows him. He gives him boils from head to toe. I don't know if you've ever had a boil, but they're painful. And so here he is covered from head to toe. He is miserable. He's lost everything. And now the story goes on and there's this exchange between him and his friends. And his friends are basically telling him, obviously you have sinned. And Job's saying, I haven't. And even though Job questions God through all of this, he remains faithful to God. He remains the same. No matter what his situation was, he went from great wealth to losing everything, including his own kids. And then he comes out the other side, his faithfulness. God then blesses him again with twice as much as he ever had. And so Job now is double as rich as he was. And yet through it all, through all the situations, all these ups and downs, Job remains faithful. That's the story in it, right? That's the story of this patience in suffering. No matter what your situation is, and us, you know, we don't view ourselves as wealthy, but interestingly enough, probably 90% of the world would look at you and I and go, I would give anything to have their wealth. And so our situation is different. We ended up in a situation where we had nothing, or in a situation where all of a sudden we were billionaires. What would our relationship with God look like? Would it remain steady? Would it continue to be the rock of our lives? Or would we be different? There are two verses to me that don't seem to fit. And when I first read through this, I was like, I just need to ignore those. Verse 9 and verse 12, they don't really fit. But then I thought, no, we need to look at that. One's right in the midst of this idea of having patience in suffering as we wait for God, or our faith remains solid, right? And the second one comes at the end of it. And this is, verse 9 says, don't grumble about each other, brothers and sisters, or you will be judged. For look, the judge is standing at the door. Don't grumble about each other. And then at the end, verse 12, he says, but most of all, my brothers and sisters, never take an oath by heaven or earth or anything else. Just say a simple yes or no so that you will not sin and be condemned. And so again, we're going to go back to what we were just talking about, our situation in life. Our situations will change. I've gone through really good situations, and then our situation has changed, and we've gone through bad, and it's an up and down. And I believe that's the vein that James is talking about here. Your attitude toward God should remain steady. Your faith should be like a rock, but also your attitude toward people should always be the same. If you're down on your luck, if you're suffering, don't grumble about each other. Don't rip people apart because maybe they're wealthy, or maybe they're poor, or maybe they're not helping you, whatever it is, but don't grumble about it. It doesn't help you at all. Stay true to love people. And then he says, let your yes be yes and your no be no. You don't need to do anything. Jesus says the exact same thing in Matthew chapter 5. You don't need to swear about this or swear by that. Just have integrity. Just be honest. And no matter what your situation is, if you're rich or you're poor or you're somewhere in between, if you are suffering or things are going really well, have integrity. Have honesty. And love people. Don't grumble about them. Love them. I read a story recently about a famous tattoo artist. It was in a book that I was reading. And as I was studying James this week, I was reminded of that story. You see, this guy, he was working his tail off to try to become a tattoo artist. I guess it's not an easy road. And he was from a lower middle class family right in the midst of LA. And he had really, they had no money to speak of. And so he was working hard, trying to make this happen, trying to make his life better. And all of a sudden, one day, his grandmother wins the lottery. She wins over $6 million. Life-altering, right? What an amazing thing. I mean, what a boost to the whole family. And the grandmother's excited. But what's funny about it is this influx of wealth comes into this lower to middle class family. And you know what happened? Fighting, all kinds of terrible things, and people coming from everywhere out of the family trying to get money from the grandmother. Eventually, the grandmother, she dies. It drove her insane, this money. And she put this tattoo artist's mother in charge of the trust and the money. And the rest of the family sued to have her removed. And it went from lawsuit to lawsuit. And eventually, in the midst of all this craziness, this young man, he's watching his family tear itself apart. He removed himself from the situation. He said, I want nothing to do with the money. I am done with this. And so he left the whole situation, continued his pursuit. He becomes this famous tattoo artist and making really good money. And eventually, all that $6 million, it was gone. It got spent, it got paid to lawyers, and it was just, it was gone. And it left their family just in disarray, just dysfunctional, worse than ever. I mean, seriously, if they would have never won that money, they would have been way better off. And so after all this fizzles out, this young tattoo artist is doing really well, and he begins hiring a few of his relatives, his brothers and sisters, to work for him. He eventually buys his mom, who, even though she was the head of the money at one time, she had nothing left. He buys her an apartment to live in. He ends up taking care of this family that all they did is they went after all this money. They thought they had life made. Instead, it did the exact opposite. And this man that I'm telling the story about, this tattoo artist, he was not a believer, not a Jesus follower. But there's something about his actions, that his integrity, his honesty. And even when the family had all this money, he could have jumped in the middle of it to try to claim his share, to make his life easier, right? But he said, no, that's not who I want to be. And he was true to his own authentic self right through the midst of it. And as followers of Jesus, we should be the most honest. We should have the highest integrity. We should love and be kind to people way more than the world, no matter what our situation is. And I believe today that is our challenge, that our love for people and our love for God is our rock.